Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Hi, everybody. You tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about money, making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, with my co-host, Andrew, my son, Newman.
Afternoon.
And we got Joey G in the booth, producing and engineering.
Hello, what's up, guys?
Okay, Joey. Every Thursday, we broadcast live from 4:30 to 5. And if you can't listen to us while we're streaming, you can get any show archived on the website, and you can download a free podcast through iTunes, Flash Talks Cash. So if you want to speak to us during the show, we'd love to take your calls. Joey G will handle it. The number is
718-497-2128.
718-497-2128. Or you can email us anytime, info@heritageradionetwork.com, and we'll be happy to discuss anything you have regarding money during our show. Okay, so this week's show is a two-part show, or maybe even a three-part show. But I wanted to
This is going on for 3 weeks?
No, I mean three parts of
three
the
Three segments.
Three segments. Okay, thanks for clarifying that, Drew. So this show is going to be about your tax refunds, and we're also going to talk about buying a new car, and we might get into another subject, but we'll talk about that later. So first let's talk about tax refunds. So the reason why I wanted to bring this up is you just finished filing your tax returns this week. They were due on Tuesday, and if you didn't file them, then you got an extension, so you got 6 months to file them. And one of the most common questions I got during filing tax season was, I would suggest to people that your refunds are too large and that you should change your withholdings to get the money in your pocket during the year as opposed to leaving them sit with the government. So when I say your refunds are too large, people say, but that's a good thing. Well, yeah, but that's a good thing because now, you don't owe. That's a great thing. But the other side of it is, if you're getting like a $5,000 refund, that means $100 extra a week came out of your paycheck, because that's 50 weeks times $100 is $5,000. And we use a very round approximate numbers that you let the government use your money all year. And you probably went into debt because you didn't have enough money to pay your credit card bill.
What if you don't go to debt? Maybe it's like a built-in savings plan for people.
So some people, it's a built-in savings plan. But, hopefully you get beyond that as you grow up. And you handle your finances a little bit better. For a financial advisor, one of the worst things to do is to let your money sit and you don't have access to it until you file your tax return in February, March, or April. And you might need that money during the year. I know $100 a week, I think that's a lot of money. So, there's a lot of people that could use the $100 a week. Or even if you say, okay, I still like to get a refund. I want a refund. So cut it in half and take $50 a week less home and give, bring home 50 more a week, I should
say.
It's
hard to do that,
Okay, well, that's what I'm here to tell you, how to do that.
How do you do it?
Okay, so that's very common. How do I do it? I just had the talk the other day. A woman got $11,000 back. I said, that's way too much money. That's almost $1,000 a month too much that she's paying into the government. So she says, what should I do? So this is what I'm telling you. You have to change your withholdings with your payroll department. You have to fill out that dreadful form called the W-4 form, and in New York City, it's the IT-2104. Now, you need a degree in taxes in order to figure out this form. It's a very complicated calculation when you go through all the lines, and most people just give up. And I don't blame you, because I think it's absurd. But I have a basic way of doing it. I went through the charts today, and I'm going to tell you that each dependent, depending on the bracket you're in, but let's just say you make, it's all based upon your taxable income. So if you make $50,000 a year and you're a single person and all you have is yourself, your taxable income is close to $40,000 by the time you get your standard deduction and you get your exemption. So you have to think about your taxable income versus your gross income. So when you change a dependent on the federal, and we have to treat the federal differently than the state. They're two different brackets, two different tax charts. So let's just talk about the federal for now. So let's say your refund from the IRS was $5,000 this year. So I'm saying you have some ability to adjust your refund, to adjust your withholdings, to reduce your refund. It comes to the difference between one extra dependent on a federal chart is $40 a month.
A month?
A month.
Okay.
Okay. So if I say you want, you're paying out and you want to reduce your refund by $5,000 to $2,500. You say, I still want to get a refund. So that means you have
$40 a month is only going to be $500 per exemption.
So you're going to have to up your dependents a little bit more. Okay.
So to two or three,
depending on how big that refund is. So a federal refund in the $20,000 bracket is about $40 a month. Of course, as you get to be a bigger wage earner, when you're in the next bracket, and let's say you earn $50,000 a year, and by the time you write your deductions off, your taxable income is about $40,000. A change in one dependent is about $73 a month. Okay, it's more valuable because you're in a higher bracket. Mm-hmm. So you have to take that into consideration. And then, of course, when you get into the next bracket, the numbers get larger. So let me go to the bigger bracket, okay?
This is
what, too confusing? Well, you got to change your withholdings, and it's not a
simple thing.
But
I don't think you're offering any clarity. You're just throwing numbers at people in different varying tax brackets and things like that. Where, like, so say you're taking home a refund on a federal tax return, usually about $1,000 for a single one, and then you pretty much break even on the state side, correct? On New York State.
Well, we didn't go to state and city. I'll go to that next. Let's do the federal, okay? Let's say your federal refund is $1,000. You want to reduce it.
But you can't really reduce it much more than that.
Well, yes, you can. Of course you can. You can do anything you want. It can bring you down to zero. So when you're in the $100,000 and higher bracket, you're each time you increase your dependent, you're going to save $82 a month. So the point is you have to increase, and that's assuming you're filing single. If you're single and your refunds are very large, you can go to a married filing status. What you put on the W-4 form does not mean that's what you have to file. You can be, now I have a friend, she's a head of household, she has a young child, she files single four and she gets too much money back. I said go to married five. So when you switch over from single to married, you automatically change your tax bracket, and a married person gets taxed at a lower rate than a single person, if assuming you have the same income. If you make $100,000, a single person is going to pay more taxes than a married person.
But what if you actually are married and your husband or your wife makes more money than you do? That's a whole other complication.
Well, yeah, when you're married and you're trying to fill these charts out, you have to coordinate it. The husband and wife have to coordinate it, because I've seen it too many times where you're married to each other and you have no children, and each of you are claiming married two. So when you put it all together, you're claiming married four, and then you're short taxes. Mm-hmm. So you have to coordinate it with your spouse. These tax forms, the W-4 form and the IT-2104, are very complicated, I have to tell you. So what I often do is I suggest to people after I do their taxes is to look at your refund. If you think your refund's too high, and $11,000 is a huge refund. So if you think your refund's too high, you have to march to the payroll department and make some changes. You can change your filing status, like I suggested, and up your dependents. Maybe you have to up your dependents by three, especially if you start having things write-offs such as mortgage interest, real estate taxes, you have child credits, you have tuition credits. All of these things reduce your tax bill. Therefore, you could bring home more money each week in your paycheck. And lots of times, this will help you get out of credit card debt. I've seen too many people get these honking refunds at the end of the year, in February, March, and April. They get a nice $5,000, $10,000 check, and they owe it all to the credit card. That, to me, doesn't make any sense, to rack up your credit card bills and let Uncle Sam use your money all year. You should be taking your money home each week in your paycheck and handling your finances a lot better than that. Okay. Now,
a lot of people aren't good at handling their finances.
Yeah, I understand. Well, this is what I'm here to teach you, how to do it. You got to take that extra money and pluck it down on your credit card, or stop charging and use the money you have in your paycheck to pay your current bills. Don't, you know, I'm not here to tell you how to stop spending money and save yourself. I'm here to tell you what you can do with your money instead of giving it to Uncle Sam at this point. Now, on the state and city side, those numbers usually are smaller. And of course, the brackets are less important, because when you change your from each dependent, on the New York City, you save 75 cents a week, and on the state, you save $1.20. So together, every time you increase your dependent, you're going to see $2 a week increase.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the year, if you get $1,000, $2 times 50 weeks is what? $1,000? Or is it
$100?
$100. So, you know, this is not, again, if you're getting whopping refunds, and most people don't get really large refunds from the state. You know, you can.
What about
again,
when you're paying?
Okay, we can talk about that side. Now, if you're paying, there's a multitude of reasons why you're paying. First of all, if you're self-employed, you got to pay quarterly estimated taxes. And most people are resistant to pay it. I don't want to give Uncle Sam. I don't want to be disciplined. I don't want to have to do that. But the bill at the end of the year is phenomenal. And this is so common, especially when you're a new freelancer or a newly self-employed person. They get this honking bill for last year they have to pay on April 15th. Let's just say you owe $5,000. And then they have to make their first quarter payment for the new year on April 15th. So you get double whammied and you're behind the eight ball all the way.
You don't have to do that.
Yes, you do. You have to pay estimated taxes, or else you're going to pay penalties and interest on the underpayment of your taxes. So if you owe if you're self-employed or a freelancer of any kind and you have untaxed income somewhere, pay quarterly taxes so you don't get slammed. It's easier to pay $1,000 in four installments of $250 than it is to pay $1,000 at one fell swoop. And also, if you're a W-2 employee and you're still owing, you need to go to the payroll department and change your withholdings the other way. As I mentioned earlier, it's very common for a married couple, both of them claiming two, and they have no children, and they each are deducting not enough taxes each week out of their paycheck, because according to when they combine their incomes, they're claiming married four. So one of you have to go to the payroll department and either change your withholdings to married one, or one goes to married zero, the other one goes to married two. You need to analyze this and see, maybe the higher wage earner could do the married two and the lower wage earner could be married zero or something like that. Another big problem that happens with this balance due is one person makes a lot of money and the other person in a married couple makes a little bit of money, or you have a second job. The second job is taxed when you combine the income at a much higher bracket. And when the payroll department is taxing a job, suppose you make $25,000 on your second job and you make $100,000 on your first job, the second job doesn't realize that you're going to combine and make $125,000 for the year. They think you're only going to make $25,000 for the year, so they don't tax enough. So you have to do a little coordinating of your own and make sure you cover yourself on your taxes so you don't get slammed on April 15th. So those are the suggestions I have for too much refund. Don't let Uncle Sam use your money, especially if you're falling behind on your own bills. And if you owe, make some changes. Change your dependents or pay estimated taxes. And of course, there are other things that you should be doing to help your refund, such as taking advantage of all the tax-saving things out there, 401k plans, IRAs. All of that should have been done by April 15th or April 17th this year. And if you're on extension, there's a couple of more things that you could still do. You have until October 15th. And one last thing I wanted to say. If you haven't filed for a while and you get refunds every year, so the IRS will refund your money for 3 years and that's it. After 3 years, if you haven't filed and it's been more than 3 years since you should have been filed, you will not get your refunds. They'll just keep your refunds. However, if you owe, that stays open forever. You owe the IRS. They never forgive that. So if you owe money, it could go back 10 years. You'll have to owe for all 10 years. If you get refunds, and then you're filing it at one time for 10 years, you're only going to get refunds for the latest 3 years, and the other 7 years, you lose your refunds. So don't get yourself into that position, especially if you're in a refund position. Get your money. Okay, we're going to take a break now. We're going to come back and talk about the next part of the show is buying a car.
Another day, another dollar. That's what I'm working for today. Another day, another dollar.
This program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA. Visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
Working jobs and enjoy. But it ain't easy finding something for this lonesome hearted boy. Another day, another dollar. That's what I'm working for today. Another day, another dollar. Sure can't buy my blues away.
Okay, we're back. Flash Talks Cash. Andrew said he still didn't understand what I was trying to tell you guys.
This whole situation is just, taxes are just very confusing.
It's very difficult to determine how much is the right amount to withhold, but you can fine tune it and may take a few years till you get it right. So give yourself some time and work with your accountant and try to figure it out. I just don't have any, I don't see the point of letting the government keep my money. That's all I have to say.
Each case is just so different from each other,
yes,
every other case.
That it's true.
It's hard to give advice.
Well, I just wanted to tell you, you can change your withholdings and certainly change your filing status to get closer to zero. Okay, so now I'm going to ask Andrew and my listeners for some advice because I have a financial question that I need some input. My air conditioner on my car went this week.
Oh, did it?
Oh, boy. I know, you know, it got to be like 80 degrees the other day.
Yeah.
So it was blowing hot air on me.
The air conditioner, it just ran out of coolant.
No, the air conditioner. Well, that's, I didn't know. So I brought it to the mechanic today, and I got the bad news. The bad news is I was hoping it was just fill me up with some more Freon, and I'm back on track. But no, the condenser went. Now, just a little background. My car is 9 years old.
It's more than that, isn't it?
It's 9 years old, and it's got 130,000 miles on it. But it's a great little car, Honda CR-V. And you know me, I don't like to change cars. I like to keep my cars. I like to keep them generally 10 years, 150,000 miles. So I'm right on track with this Honda CR-V. But I was really hoping to keep this car at this
point. So how many cars have you owned in your life?
Oh, I've owned not that many. Like every 10 years. I've been driving 40 years. So I have about 4 cars.
Okay.
Yeah. And how many have you had? You have mine. So anyway.
Zero. I don't want to own a car.
Okay. So anyway.
Try to keep the carbon footprint small.
Good. So now I spoke to the mechanic, who's a very smart guy, who has his own radio show regarding mechanics. He's great. And he said to me, I said, oh, what am I going to do? I'm not prepared at this point to pay $1,000 to get this car fixed. I have to
How much
think
is it?
About it. $1,000 to
Why
fix it.
Why just buy a new car?
Well, that's what I have to decide to do. So he said to me, well, a used car should cost you about $1,500 a year to maintain. Some years you'll pay a little bit more. You might pay $2,000. The next year you might pay a little bit less. You might pay $800, $900.
Is that how much you pay?
That's the average to maintain, to fix an old car. That's not maintenance. That doesn't include oil changes and batteries.
So he's saying something breaks every year.
Right.
And you pay $1,500 a year.
Well, something doesn't break, but it should average out to about $1,500 a year.
That's a lot of money.
Well, let's analyze it. So I started to think about how much it costs. First of all, I went online to see what my value of my car is right now.
What is it?
So there's the private party value, and it's about $8,500.
No way.
Yes.
Who would pay $8,500
and
for a 10-year-old CR-V?
A 9-year-old.
It's 10.
And if I traded it in, it's about $6,500.
It's a 10-year-old car. It came out. What year is your car?
2003. True.
Okay. So that means it came out in 2002.
No.
That's how cars work.
Okay, whatever. Okay, Drew, I'm not going to discuss it.
It's a 10-year-old car.
I bought it April 2003.
Okay, it's great.
Okay. So now,
who would pay that much for a 10-year-old car?
I went to the Kelley Blue Book. This is where I went. So he has to argue with me about everything.
I think people go to those things in value and way too much. Like,
okay.
Why would anyone pay that much money for a used car?
Because that's what it's worth. Because you know how much it costs to buy a brand new one.
$30,000.
Well, close. So a brand new Honda CR-V, similar to what I have, is $26,600.
Exactly.
Okay. No, well, there's a big difference between $8,500 and $26,000. A huge difference.
It's $18,000.
$18,000 difference. Okay. Okay. So now I have to figure out, should I...
But then, look at it this way. If you're adding in $1,500 a year to purchase said car, so now that $8,500 car cost me $10,000 after year one. Bang, off the top.
What are you talking about? Oh.
Because of what the okay. The thing you're at.
The mechanic
said. Jesus Christ.
Right.
So right now, I'm at a $16,000 difference.
Okay.
And then it's only going to go up each year, whereas a new car won't have that, and they'll probably have a warranty or something covering
it. Well, let me finish my analysis, okay? Because you're not quantifying it. You're just
what do you mean I'm quantifying it?
This is the way I see it. So if I bought my car for $23,000 9 years ago, and it's worth $8,500, let's say $23,500, and it's worth $8,500, that means I've used up $17,000, is that right?
$15,000
worth of car.
In 9 years.
So 9 years, $15,000, which is probably about $1,500 a year.
Well, if you use 10, it would be.
Okay, let's just 10. Okay, 10 years. $1,500 a year, that's how much it costs me for my car to purchase it. Now, I could go and buy another car, and the numbers run the same. It'll cost me about $1,500 a year as opposed to fixing this old car, which should cost me about $1,500 a year. So I'm at the same point. But there's a couple of pluses and minuses. A, it's far more expensive to insure a new car versus an older car. But the other side of it is... what was the other side?
Maintenance?
Well, no, the maintenance is the 15. The maintenance is the same. You still have to do oil changes. You still have to buy tires.
But the repairs and stuff aren't going
to
be...
Well, the repairs are the $1,500 a year.
But it's not going to have that. You're not going to have that with a new car. Well,
but I'm paying $1,500 a year in buying the car. Remember, I just went through that analysis.
I understand
analysis.
That.
So I'm paying either by buying a new car $1,500 a year or repairing my old car for $1,500 a year. So, but I'm saying now the difference in the insurance, it's pretty probably $1,000 a year difference between an old car and a new car, a 10-year-old car and a new car. But there was something else. I forgot what I was going to say. So now I have to decide.
Where's your question for me? When are Joey and I getting involved in this situation?
Well,
you said, I have
a question here.
You have a question?
A question's from Michael Skirbo.
Yes.
It says, "Hi, Joanne. I'm looking to purchase a new car in the near future. My trade-in does not have any... liens? I don't know
liens,
what that
means. Liens.
Okay, I don't have a car. I don't know what this stuff means.
It means there's no loans on it.
Yeah, he doesn't owe any money on it.
Doesn't own it. Okay, yeah, I don't know anything about money either. Its value is between $5,500 and $7,500. The vehicle I plan to purchase is $22,000, including taxes. Financing is set at 4.15% over 60 months or less with a $1,000 deposit. I don't qualify for the preferred rate of 1.9% offered by the manufacturer. So here's the question. Do I trade in my vehicle and apply it towards the purchase, lowering or shortening my loan obligation, or do I sell the vehicle and keep the proceeds of the sale to make a personal investment, promote my business, pay off a few credit cards, etc.?
I would use the money personally.
Well,
you're going to get a better return than the difference in the interest rate for the shorter period of time.
Right.
Paying off your credit cards, you're going to save money on the interest rate there, which is probably much higher.
Right.
Or personally, as long as the investment is done properly in your own business, then you'll reap better rewards that way as well. The returns are greater by investing in yourself than to try to diminish.
Buy a depreciating asset.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's true. Andrew's absolutely true. But the other side of it is, what is his car going to cost to continue to leave it on the road?
No, if he wants to sell the current car and then lease a new one.
He's not in the lease program.
No,
he's looking to buy, and he doesn't have great credit.
Program.
He doesn't have great credit. So
but it wouldn't be that much of a jump. Most car credit rates are going to go up to maybe 6 or 7%
mm-hmm.
versus whatever his credit card is or whatever return on investment account would be. Probably would be more than the 4 or 5% difference.
Right.
Hopefully you get like a 7% return on an investment account.
Right.
Or your credit card, you're probably paying at least 13 to 14%.
Sure.
And if his credit's really as bad as he says it, it's probably 17 to 20%.
Right.
And he should cut that down.
I agree with Andrew. I agree that if he's got credit card debt and he has an option right now, but where's he going to get the money to pay the car off? He's got to sell the car.
No, he sells the car, keeps the money, keeps a down payment of $1,000.
He's going to trade in the vehicle. Yeah. So.
No, he wants to sell it. If he can sell
private party sell.
If he can sell it rather than reducing the down payment,
right.
I'd rather do that, take that money and pay off some debt.
Yeah, but I don't think that he could get a $1,000 down payment without trading in the car.
No, he sells his car.
Oh.
Takes whatever. It's probably like $1,000 or $2,000 down when you purchase a new car.
Well, you need more.
Not really. Depending on the car.
Depending on his financing
Depending on the car,
program,
the financing, everything.
Right.
There's a few factors involved.
Right.
Say he can get maybe it's $3,000 out of the $7,500
right,
for his car.
Right.
He did the $4,500.
He used to credit card
debt. Used to pay
debt.
Down the debt.
Yes, that's the most important thing in this analysis, is if he's got credit card debt and he has an opportunity to pay it down and still be able to pull this car off, he should do that. However, he might not have all those options as Andrew's thinking.
I know, it's just that's...
Because if he trades in and puts $1,000 down, that may be the only way he can afford a new car.
Uh-huh.
So, should he buy a new car? Well... He's at the same place that I am. What is it going to cost to keep his old car on the road? How old is it? You know, he doesn't get into all those details. And also, it's a personality thing. I don't care to drive a brand new car. I could care less. But, you know, it's a 10-year-old car, and how much money should I invest into this? Now, I just put over $2,000 of my money into this car last year, and it's running fine, except the air conditioner went. So... you know, it's a personal.
You're making
decision.
A lot of investments in this car.
I am.
Well, you made $2,000 last year, and you have $1,000 this year.
Well, I didn't do it yet.
I know, but I'm just
that.
Saying.
But also, if I keep the car longer, the trade-in value or the resale value continues to diminish. So, should I sell it now, trade it in now to get the $6,000 or $8,000 that they say I could get for it? If I keep it longer, then that just keeps going down.
I couldn't see him paying more than $5,000 for your car.
Well, you know, Andrew, you have no idea because you've never even bought one car. So,
no, I'm just
and you
saying.
Haven't been in the market. Go to the Kelly Blue Book and decide and determine that. Okay, so I'm going to be debating this decision. I have about a month before the air conditioner really needs to be used.
I would take it rid of the car and get
and
no
Andrew,
one.
Andrew is speaking from his personal preference because he uses my car pretty often.
No, it's not personal. I don't care about air conditioning. It's whatever. But, like, I think the problems are only going to continue to mount or pile up on said car already, that it's time to move on. And buying a newer product, the chances of it breaking...
Oh, that's what I want to say. Remember I was telling you about the insurance system is slower, but the other side of it is I buy a new car, I will get a new car that will get better gas mileage with the price of gasoline, $4 a gallon. Gas mileage... A mile per gallon has become a very important
Your
factor.
Your car doesn't get good gas mileage?
It gets 20 miles to gallon.
That's it?
Yeah, and you know, the newer cars get higher miles per gallon. I would look for a car that got higher miles. I already talked to the mechanic about a hybrid, and he said to me, they're not perfected yet. They have a lousy carbon footprint right now. I didn't understand why. I don't know. He's a mechanic. He knows.
Why does it cost more to insure a new car?
Because it's much more valuable.
Yeah.
So okay, the higher the value, the more the premium is.
You have to replace parts of your car. If you get into an accident, it's
yes,
more expensive.
Yes, it's okay, much more expensive to...
It seems as there's more risk, though, with the...
Not if for an accident there
it's,
isn't.
It's not about theft. It's more about collision and liability insurances that you're trying to cover.
It's about theft, too. I mean,
but
if you steal a new car, it's worth $25,000 versus an old car, it's worth $6,000.
That's why it's the theft is cheaper on the older car,
oh, yeah.
But the collision is higher on the new car.
Yes. So
Even
anyway,
though I think it should be the other way, because if you have an older car, you don't care as much.
That's not true. You don't drive differently.
It's not like I'm driving, like, road... I'm not driving like Grand Theft Auto here, just driving it to whoever I want to drive
okay.
into. But I'm just saying, you know, if you get a little nick in your car, you're not as upset about it.
Well, I frankly drive the same, whether it's a new car or an old car. That's just somebody who's had 40 years experience. It doesn't matter what's the age of my car. I just am the same kind of driver. But back to my analysis. I said, oh, maybe I'll buy a hybrid, you know, and I'll save money on the $4 of gasoline. Frankly, I don't know what it costs to recharge my car. I don't even know where to get that done at this point.
Wouldn't it just recharge itself? Doesn't
no,
it charge
you
gotta up the
plug
gas?
It in. You gotta plug it in.
That's a,
someplace.
That's a fully electric car. That's not a hybrid.
Oh, and he said to me, when you're on a highway, which I do mostly highway driving, he says it kicks into gas because it needs more power. If you do most of your car locally in the city, it would use electric more than gas.
Oh, really?
So I was really like, well, I guess I'm not a candidate for a hybrid right now. Frankly, I do think that hybrids have to go through a few years more of ironing out the wrinkles. I think that when you buy a brand new kind of model or brand new kind of machine, it has a lot of things that has to be...
I think you should get a new car.
Well...
Just pony up to the table, Flesh.
Yeah, well, I'm going to...
Why would you want to keep fixing an old car?
I don't know. There's also an emotional attachment, but I'm not too emotional.
Really? That
to
car?
Yeah, I like that call. It's been good to me. Okay, we're at the end of our show, and I want to thank you all for listening to my financial dilemma this week, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye.